This week, Microsoft bought ZeniMax for $7.5 billion. If they don't like it, they can bring it back to GameStop for $10.50. Welcome to Triple Click, where we bring the games to you. This week, we are talking about the big news, Microsoft's major acquisition, plus Sony's big PS5 presentation, including Final Fantasy 16. That is right, 16. I'm Jason Trier.
I'm Kirk Hamilton.
And I'm Maddie Myers.
Hey.
And here we are.
We're back for another episode.
Click, click, click. Back again.
Our way into your hearts. before we get started, a couple of things. First of all, a big shout out to all of you out there who have supported the show so far by becoming Max Fun members. Just a reminder to those of you who have not already become members, you can join at MaximumFun.org/join. You get free access to, well, I guess it's not free, you get access to our bonus content, including our monthly Beans casts. I believe this month we are talking about Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. So
we
look
sure
out
are.
For that. That will be hitting next week. I believe next Monday, but early next week for subscribers, for members, for Max Fun members. And yeah, thank you. Thank you again. And if you can't afford to support the show, that's really no problem. And,
yeah,
and we will not hold it against you. But one thing you can do, even if you can't pay or don't want to pay, is tell your friends and share the show with your friends. We very much appreciate any support you can give us like that.
Yeah.
One more thing before we get started. I want to read to you guys a couple
one
of
more
things.
Thing.
Yeah, sorry, that's not
ahead.
The segment we're
that's
in, Jason.
The end
what
of the
are you
show.
Even saying?
One other thing.
An additional
I
thing.
Show you two, I want to show you, I want to read to you two from something. Okay?
Okay.
Here are some predictions. You ready?
Okay.
Okay.
Number one, Microsoft will buy a major company, not just another mid-tier studio, but something that makes us all say, wow.
Oh, no.
Number two, Microsoft will bring Game Pass to a non-Microsoft platform.
Oh,
number three,
no.
Final Fantasy 16 will be announced. Those are all predictions that I made.
Whose predictions?
And all turned out to be correct in the past, like, month. But here's the twist. They're all from 2019.
They are.
That's,
they
I was
are.
Thinking. I was They're like, I don't remember you making
year.
All of these.
Yeah.
All three of these predictions came true in the past month, and they are all from last year. That is horrible. Mm-hmm. That is just horrible. All my 2020 predictions are completely wrong. For those of you who don't understand what we're talking about, by the way,
yeah, please.
Since the last show that we hosted, since our last podcast, we've done a yearly game where we all make predictions about the year, and then the winner gets to tell the other two to play a game.
And
we also
for
play
some
a
reason
game
this year,
choice.
It was really hard to make predictions about what would happen. I can't think of anything that would have possibly
why,
impacted our predictions for 2020.
Why would it be a weird world to make predictions.
It's all going according to plan.
I just want to point out that my track record is impeccable if you only look at last year. And
right.
Year.
If you're 2 years out.
Yeah,
so I feel like this year when you write your predictions, you need to just forward them to yourself a year from now and just and then write different predictions. Don't ask me how you'll come up with those.
It's
maybe
funny
just use
because
this
I
year's
feel
again.
Like
I don't know.
Yeah, that's
I
what
feel
you do.
Like I, yeah. Oh man. Well, so if I look at my 2018 predictions, one of them is like, oh man, all of my 2018 predictions are true for 2019. Also,
amazing.
It's like, we will get our first rumors of next gen consoles. Mm-hmm. Nintendo will announce a sequel to Breath of the Wild.
So people can learn from this, one, to look at your predictions and then just take them another year out, and then to go back 2 years for your predictions.
Of
and
course.
The other one is, and I do this, is I've reused my predictions before, and
which
I think
is a good
I've gotten
tactic.
Them before. It does, yeah, it's fair because you're like, this is still going to happen. Like the unionizing one, or I think I got a point for Valve announcing a Half-Life. Yeah.
That one still hasn't happened.
Yeah. I think that unionizing one is going to happen this year. I'm kind of regretting that I didn't put it in my list. But,
feels like it might.
Yeah. My 2018 predictions are Kingdom Hearts 3 will come out and have Pixar Worlds came out in 2019. Someone will try selling a game for more than $60. Well, that happened this year. So that's a whole thing.
Here we
year.
Go. Another, yeah, another it's thing. Coming. It's coming, baby.
Anyway, let's get into the episode. Today, we have a sudden news.
Sudden news.
That's the name of our new segment when there's suddenly news and we have
it's
to talk
about
it.
It's not breaking news.
No,
it's sudden,
sudden
news.
No, it's sudden news. This is a Maddie Myers invention, sudden news.
Yes.
It's definitely not because I forgot the phrase breaking news briefly because my brain has been broken by society and I was like, sudden news.
Sudden
it's because
news.
Sudden news is what you say and it's what you always say.
That's what we've always said. No, we're all news people. We're all journalists.
Yeah, of course.
We've been saying this for years.
Some sudden news. So in the past week, since we recorded last week's episode, there's been a lot of sudden news.
It's true.
So it felt like a good time to just kind of sit down and break it down. Let's start with last week's, and then we'll get into this week's big megaton. So last week, Sony did a surprise big PS5 presentation, and they announced a bunch more stuff, including like stuff that trickled out afterwards. So a few key takeaways from this that I want to discuss with you guys. First of all, holy shit, Final Fantasy 16 is coming. you too probably don't have the same emotional attachment that I do to that franchise, but when that game got announced, when that trailer started
does
playing,
anybody?
Did you
the
cry?
The conference opened up with that. I got a little misty.
Did you well up a
no,
little
it's,
bit?
Yeah. The music is what always gets me, like that playing, and it's always like a different orchestration of the main theme, of the Final Fantasy main theme, and that's what played in the background of this one. Something cool that Kirk, I know, well, actually both of you appreciate, is that the composer for this game is very clearly this guy named Soken, who is the composer for Final Fantasy 14, which has incredible, that's the MMO, and it has incredible music. And actually,
really
this is being made by like the Final Fantasy 14 development staff. And so one of the producers on this game is Naoki Yoshida, who is generally seen as the guy who revived Final Fantasy XIV and transformed it from like a launch disaster that they had to take down into this incredible game that people still love today. In fact, that announcement got me so excited that I went and downloaded Final Fantasy XIV again and started jumping back in. And I've been playing it. People say that Shadowbringers, the most recent expansion pack to that game, has like one of the best stories in the entire series.
Yeah, have you not played it yet?
No, I'm getting there.
Enjoy it.
There hasn't been a new Final Fantasy announcement since 2013. That was when 15 was announced. The fact that they made 16 of these things, man, everything about it is mind-boggling to me. What did you guys think? Did you enjoy the trailer of Final Fantasy 16?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun.
Yeah, it was like great Final Fantasy stuff.
I mean, yes and no. It's a medieval setting. It's kind of like Final Fantasy meets Game of Thrones is the pop culture buzzwords that were all over Twitter during this announcement. Yes.
It's very much inspired by 12, I think. It feels very gritty, Game of Thrones-y, totally right. One of the things that really stood out to me about seeing this trailer is clearly like in-game footage as opposed to pre-rendered stuff. But also, it's like it's not trying to be the ultimate production values, like highest graphical fidelity. Like it looks like a normal-ass game. And I think that's actually really cool because one of Square Enix's problems and one of Final Fantasy problems over the years has been just like aiming for the highest-end graphics and kind of sacrificing a lot along the way, including your team's health and like the amount of time it takes to make these games, just for the sake of graphical quality. And so it's cool to see this game having like more realistic looking targets, I think.
So that was really cool. I would agree with that. I'm really not a Final Fantasy person, but I will say that after enjoying FF7 Remake so much this past year, I feel like I could become a Final Fantasy person, and I'm willing to give this game a try. I don't know. I'm not as excited as Jason is because I don't think it's possible to be, but I'm certainly willing to acknowledge that I was very, very into a Final Fantasy game this past year that I did not expect to be into at all. It's a different team, obviously, but still, I feel like that's worth noting, at least for my own brain. Like, maybe I'll like this one too. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel that. I mean, I'm like not a Final Fantasy person, despite having played and enjoyed a lot of different Final Fantasy games, but I would say that I'm a Final Fantasy VII person, and that playing the remake made me realize that. Like, that's the only world where I'm like, I know all these characters and have made so many jokes and like know the music inside out and like have this kind of relationship with it, even though like I like Final Fantasy Tactics probably better than any other Final Fantasy game, but 7 was the one. But yeah, playing that, I'm with you, Maddie. Playing that game and then talking about it with the two of you and like just having the experience of that game has made me be like, yeah, man, Final Fantasy 16, shit, I'm definitely going
to
play it.
Talk about it on this show. You know we're going to, so...
one of the things that's really exciting about this announcement is that the Final Fantasy 14 team is such a good track record now of like writing these incredible. So I've only gotten to Heavensward, which is the first expansion in the game, but I've already seen a huge chunk. That's like 80-100 hours in with like the whole main story campaign, which I beat a couple years ago, and so I've already gotten to see like the writing in this game is incredible, the character development, and there's a lot to like really sink your teeth into. And so I'm very excited to see this team take that talent to like a main mainline Final Fantasy game, and just like I have faith that they'll create this world and characters that like maybe we won't remember as fondly as Final Fantasy VII, because that was a pretty special game.
Yeah,
but like maybe it'll be up there with some of the other greats. I'm very optimistic about this game. Also, one little tidbit is that I've heard from people who know the game, who have worked on the game or are familiar with the game's development, that it's actually been in development for at least 4 years in some capacity. Wow. So it's coming sooner than people
think. It looks like a whole video game. Like in the trailer, I was impressed. I went in expecting it to be like the Final Fantasy theme and like a chocobo claw and then like coming soon or whatever. And instead I was like, oh shit, like this is the whole, it feels like the whole story is done. Like it was all these different parts of the story and characters and like, you know, like you said, gameplay. I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is a video game that's going to actually come out probably pretty soon.
Yeah, it feels very real. Yeah, it looks real. It doesn't look unreasonable. And I think 15 really set a terrible precedent with, like, it was announced as Versus 13 in, like, 2008 or something like that, 2006.
Yeah.
And then took 10 years to make. And so that, I think they want to shy away from that. And I think it makes sense. I mean, 15 came out in 2016, so it's already been 4 years since the last Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, and
so.
like drawing a line between development and marketing is always a little shaky, but the marketing of 15 was a mess, and to me, 15 was kind of a mess. Like, you can like it as a mess or like it less as a mess, but it was like a mess of a game. Where this,
like
it just feels like it came out really clean. They're like, here's what it is. It seems really confident. And that makes me optimistic that the game will probably, hopefully, at least also be that way.
Yes, so I am extremely excited. Other highlights of the presentation, God of War 2 was in there as a teaser. There's nothing to even talk about. It's just
like... Yeah, classic Chocobo Claw situation
You know?
It's a real Chocobo Claw. That's true.
Well, we got to see... At least we got to see Kratos murdering a Chocobo by ripping feathers out of its...
If only,
punching its eyeballs out.
And it just cut to black really fast. Really weird trailer.
I was not expecting that.
We didn't get to see any more of Horizon 2, but we did get to see more of Demon's Souls, which it turns out. So Sony did this weird thing where they like trickled out information afterwards. They actually put false information on some of the trailers, like Demon's Souls they said was coming to PC and like other platforms, and that is
they
not
did,
true.
And they said it was a PlayStation exclusive, but didn't necessarily say PlayStation 5 in the trailer. So we were having to update our news posts after the fact based on PR emails being
well,
like,
so that
oh,
was just them
so...
like putting the wrong bumper tag at the end.
Yeah.
Of it.
Which is not a good mistake.
Not a great thing to do.
No,
on
terrible.
Your live stream.
How do you do that? It's very clearly like we put this together very quickly. We also found out after the show that Spider-Man Miles Morales is coming to PS4, as I've been saying for like 2 months on this show. Like, hey, that game is definitely coming to PS4.
As we've all been saying, I mean, that's been clear
from
the
most. But it's still a relief. You know, it'll be nice that more people can play that game.
And Horizon Forbidden West is also coming to PS4, which
that
was actually surprising to me. Yeah,
that surprised me too. I did not know that. And we found out the PS5's launch lineup, which is Miles Morales. There's that Sackboy platformer thing, and then Demon's Souls. That's like the big selling point for this fall. And then here is the big bombshell. Sony essentially told us, without saying so, that their baseline for games is going to be $70 this next console generation. So the way they're doing it is Miles Morales itself. Remember that this is like a Lost Legacy style, like smaller game, so that's only $50, but then you package that with the Spider-Man PS4 remastered on PS5 and the whole package is $70. Some people said, no, that's just the case for this thing, but no, because Demon's Souls is also selling for $70. Destruction All-Stars, which is one of the other launch games, also selling for $70. So it's very clear that this is the new baseline outside of this fall's games, which I think some of which, because we're in this weird cross-gen period, like Ubisoft has said, all of their games will be $60 on next-gen. I think starting next year, we will officially see the move across all publishers, all games, from $60 to $70. Man, how do you guys feel about that? Is it like about time? Is it scary? What do you guys think?
I mean, I think it was going to happen no matter what, but I have definitely been feeling some type of way about how expensive gaming is as a hobby. And they also announced the price of the PS5.
Yeah, which actually isn't bad.
It's not bad.
All things
it's not
considering.
Bad. I mean, $500, it might be kind of painful for you, or it might not be. It depends on.
Well, I'm saying the diskless one, $400,
yes,
all you lose
true.
Is the disk drive. You get the same thing. And that's the same price as a PS3 from 7 years ago. That's pretty good, inflation considered.
It's not bad. But I've definitely been thinking about it, just especially in light of the news, it's impossible for me to not factor that in because of the world in which we live. Like, mm-hmm. we're looking mm-hmm. at mass unemployment and a global recession that is yep. probably unavoidable based on how the United States has approached this crisis. And I'm just like, man, these games sound expensive and a whole lot of people aren't going to be able to buy them. And the people who can buy them are going to easily be able to afford them because upper middle class people are doing fine right now and other people aren't. So that's kind of a dark answer to your question, but that was really truly what I thought about it when I saw the announcement 100%. Of how much the console costs and the fact that games are going to be $70 is that I'm like, if wages had risen alongside this, then we would all feel like this was completely yep. fine, but yep. they haven't. And that's a problem.
Yeah. So I thought about this as well and completely agree, like, that just gaming is very expensive. Mm-hmm. A thought that I had that's related is that that's the new game thing. Like, if you're going to be the person who plays all the new games, but there is now this subscription thing that's catching True. On where yep. now Sony is doing this. And then Game Pass. Well, now, I mean, we'll get to the Bethesda news, but like Game Pass is about to become a hell of a lot more right. appealing.
Yes. And so the big Xbox thing, to your point, is Xbox gives you for $35 a month, you can get an Xbox Series X and Game Pass. And it's like a yes. financing plan. So if right. you want the affordable, if you don't have a lot of money and you want the affordable plan, like that's the way to go, assuming you can make your monthly payments, because I think the credit cards they're partnering with are very much counting on people to like not be able to, and then you get into yeah. serious trouble.
I know, which is predatory and crappy, yep. but as yep. long as you're able to make the payments, right.
if you're
it's
able
a
to make
deal.
Them, it's a really good deal. Yeah. But yeah, Kirk, finish what you were saying.
So yeah, anyways, that's basically it, is that there is also this world where this very expensive thing becomes more affordable right. in the way that a lot of things become like quote unquote more affordable, and that like we're given a line of credit and like mm-hmm. we pay it off over time. Oof. But also old games, even slightly old games that are great that most people probably haven't had time to play are mm-hmm. almost like they're worth like $5 or $10 each. They're worth almost nothing. The same way that on PC you can get things for so cheap. Now if you just like have PlayStation Plus or Game Pass, you just have so many games to play that it almost makes me think that there will be a new, maybe it's already the way that a lot of people play games. I guess it kind of is, given how many people tell me they play Game Pass games and just get whatever's on Game Pass, where you get all your games that way. And then like once or twice a year, you're like, okay. And now there's the big new thing, which I guess will probably just be Sony games mm-hmm. Or Nintendo games, I guess, where you'll pay full price for those games. But most of the games that people play will be via some sort of service.
That's kind of a better future, but...
Which is a good segue into our next big topic, because this week, possibly the biggest gaming story of the year, or one of the biggest gaming stories of the year, is that Microsoft on Monday announced that it was spending $7.5 billion. That's almost twice as much as Disney paid for Lucasfilm, by the way, wow. to buy ZeniMax, the owner of Bethesda, which is the makers of Fallout and The Elder Scrolls, and also has a bunch of other subsidiaries like id, makers of Doom, Machine Games, makers of Wolfenstein, and a couple of others. Arcane, of course, Dishonored, mm-hmm. one of the show's
and
favorites,
Prey.
The show favorites, and Prey, another show favorite. So this is a humongous deal. So to answer a couple of likely questions, so Microsoft has said that they're going to honor the commitment Bethesda made to Sony, the contract Bethesda signed with Sony to put their next two games, Deathloop and Ghostwire Tokyo, as PS5 console exclusives, which leads to the hilarious situation that Microsoft is releasing two PS5 console exclusives. Like yep. literally, Microsoft published games are being paid money to deprive themselves from Xbox. It's hilarious.
So what I want to know is it going to say Microsoft when you load up Deathloop?
Yeah, no, it definitely will. It'll say Microsoft Game Studios.
Amazing.
Yeah, part of good. Microsoft Game Studios. And then it's so funny. And then the other big question people have, which doesn't have a concrete answer yet, is what about future Bethesda games? Are they going to be not on PlayStation? And yeah. so what Phil Spencer told my colleague at Bloomberg, Dina Bass, is that they're going to put games on PC and Xbox, including Xbox Game Pass day one, just like all their other published games. And then other consoles will be decided on a case-by-case basis, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty safe to say that they're not, unless like they enhance their relationship with Sony or Sony gives them something in return, like lets them put Xbox Game Pass on PlayStation, they're not going to put the next Fallout or Elder Scrolls on PS5. I think it would be a fascinating like horse trade to be like, listen, Sony, if you let us put Xbox Game Pass on here, then we'll do it. But that's a Game of Thrones-y conversation for another day.
In the meantime, a wild Jason prediction for 2022.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is, well, I'll predict it next year, and then it'll happen the following year.
Right.
When Starfield comes out. So, what do you two think? Kirk, what's your take on this major consolidation within the video game industry?
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally nervous about consolidation only because everything is always consolidating and huge corporations buy everything. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious how developers at some of these, especially at like, you know, smaller studios at like Machine Games or Arcane, people who have had the creative freedom to make really cool stuff under Bethesda. And I'm sure it just takes me back to when we would get purchased back when we were working at Kotaku.
Yes.
And
yes, I was thinking about that too.
I'm sure. I feel like we'll all feel that way forever when...
So I have a little bit of insight onto that, actually. Two things. One is that I think some, if not a lot of them, have benefited financially. I know there were raises and bumps and bonuses being promised. And also anyone who owned ZeniMax shares is going to make out in a good way, make out like a bandit here. But the second thing, and maybe this is a point you hadn't considered, but if you look back at Bethesda's past few years, one of the reasons they wanted to sell so badly is because they have not been doing too hot since like the release of Fallout 4. Prey, a lot of Arcane's games have been kind of flops or semi-flops. Prey, Dishonored 2, Fallout 76 was obviously a debacle. Something to consider is that any other company might not want the kind of like mid-size, like not super mega hit immersive sim games that like a company like Arcane makes, whereas Microsoft loves that shit because it just goes on Xbox Game Pass and helps fill up the catalog. And so all the studios they've been buying so far are like in that in-between area of like the double A, quote unquote, of like games that might cost $10 million to make and might sell like a million copies instead of 10 million copies. And Arcane fits really nicely in there. And maybe some of Bethesda's other stuff does too. So actually, creatively, maybe it'll help them, even though I'm with you on like being nervous about consolidation. I don't necessarily think it would be a bad thing for the developers themselves.
No, sure, for sure. And I think it's more... I think it's as much my stuff as any actual prediction about what's happening. Mm-hmm. It's just seeing a group of people who were working under one paradigm get purchased and just adjust to the fact that they're going to be working under another paradigm. Uh-huh. And the fact that at every point, at least in my experience, that's happened to me, it's always been a lie. Like there's always some amount of bullshitting, and it's not always the end of the world. It's not like, you know, it's not always as bad as it went with Kotaku in the end, even though I wasn't even really there for that final transition.
But you got to hear about it.
I did. And it's not always the worst case scenario of like, and now we're just going to be pillaged for parts and everything is going to fall apart. Like a lot of times it's just like, we're so excited about this new partnership and things are staying exactly as they were. Like, and you know, then behind the scenes.
And yes. How long does that last?
That's always the promise, right? Is like, we're going to let you stay independent and keep doing the creative projects that you already do so well. Yes. And we're just going to bankroll them and we won't get involved. And then like 6 months goes by, a year goes by, they're looking at your bottom lines and they're like,
what if you made this into a service game? Like just an idea.
Hey, we just have a few notes. And it turns out if you don't implement our notes, we are taking away everything from you.
Right.
And that's, but we don't know if that's going to happen.
100%. Especially with a company like Microsoft that just has a history of like big transitions and overhauls and changes over the past like decades, where like 1 year they'll be doing one thing. Even you look at Xbox, look at the Xbox One launch and like how quickly they pivoted from like that approach to something else and then something else entirely with Xbox Game Pass.
I think some of those decisions have been pretty smart, but I do agree with Kirk about just the overall feeling of Microsoft acquiring something, because I know they've been eyeing this for a while. There have been rumors for a while about Microsoft making acquisitions. They've already made some acquisitions. Yeah. We've talked about the Double Fine one on the show in the past. And so this isn't unexpected in that way, but it is still... It makes me wonder if this conversation would have been really different if the pandemic hadn't happened this year, and if Bethesda would feel differently about its security and finances if we were in a different version of 2020. And we'll never know the answer to that. But I do think that that was probably something that played a role, was like, the future is extremely unknowable right now across all industries. Microsoft has money falling out of its ears and every other orifice, if Microsoft had orifices, and they are extremely stable and safe feeling, and like getting acquired by them probably felt like a pretty good proposition in 2020. And that, I don't know, that's my theory, is that played a role as well.
That makes sense, especially when I think about like what Bethesda had on the horizon.
Yeah.
Where like whatever, like the games they were working on, Elder Scrolls and is it Starfield, is that what it's called?
Yep,
the
space game. Which those could be very far
away.
Yeah,
they're so far away, and there's this question of like, what is Bethesda actually doing for money? Like, you know, I'm sure they're making money on some things, but like Deathloop looks like it's gonna be really cool, and I think the three of us will probably dig it, but it does seem like one of those games that some people will like, but it'll be kind of niche, and then it won't make enough money. And so, it does seem like a safe move for them.
Yeah, well, so Bethesda does have... Well, so if you look at this from Microsoft's perspective, this is like a game changer for Xbox Game Pass. And I think it's entirely for Xbox Game Pass. Like, there's been a lot of takes.
Oh, yeah.
There have been a lot of takes about like, oh, this is their next... this is their way of beating the PS5. I can promise you that like Microsoft does not give a shit about beating the PS5. Like, maybe some of their marketing people like...
When you say beating, you mean selling more Xbox Series X than
selling PS5. More consoles. Yeah. If they wanted to do that, they would make exclusive games for the Xbox instead of putting all their games on PC and Xbox and whatever else, like Game Pass, whatever. This is not... Their strategy is very much like, we want everyone in the world subscribe to Xbox Game Pass and paying us $10 a month for the privilege, because that makes them infinity revenue. That doesn't make them like... Like, they cannot give a shit about the fanboys on Twitter being like, oh, Xbox gonna beat the PlayStation now. Like... That is not Microsoft's strategy. But from their perspective on Game Pass, not only do they now get every single Bethesda game as a new, like, day one launch game for Game Pass, which is such an appealing proposition from a customer, because it's like, why would I spend $70 on Deathloop when I could get it for $10 a month, like, among other hundreds of other games? But also, Microsoft gets access to this super lucrative back catalog of games, and a couple of them have been on Game Pass. I believe Morrowind was on there, and, like, Fallout 3 at some point, or Fallout 4 at some point, or both. But but now they can put everything, like all of Bethesda's old stuff, can suddenly go on Game Pass, and that is super, super appealing as a proposition.
And really cool for people who have Game Pass. Like, that's great. I mean, when it's Saturday and you're sitting there being like, I want to play something different, and you look and you're like, you know, I never played Dishonored 2. That's a great example. I kind of did that, you know, what, a year ago, I guess, and it was great. I was like, whoa, this game is amazing, and I just like didn't find time for it when it came out. I have a question that's just I'm thinking back to other Microsoft acquisitions, and I'm wondering what the two of you think of this. When Microsoft bought Mojang and now owns Minecraft, they did not make Minecraft into an exclusive for Xbox. Do you think that that is some sort of a precedent here, and that that could inform the chances of them making all these Bethesda games into Xbox exclusives? Jason, you're shaking your head.
I feel like the genie was already out of the bottle on Minecraft, and you couldn't put it back in at that point.
Minecraft,
it was
already
such a cross-platform sensation that buying Minecraft and making it exclusive would have pissed off so many people that it wasn't a worthy proposition to consider.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, okay, so... That is true, but on second thought, I just had kind of like an interesting change of heart. Mojang did release a game recently, Minecraft Dungeons, which is actually pretty good. I played a bunch of it on my PC.
Fun.
They actually put that on Switch and PS4. And so that is an interesting, like, if you're looking at Microsoft's overall strategy, that is an interesting precedent. Obviously, Microsoft has flirted with Nintendo a lot. They've put Cuphead on the Switch. They actually just announced last week that they were putting Ori 2 on the Switch in a Nintendo Direct, the one that had Hades, which we will get to later on today. So there is precedent for Microsoft being like, okay, we're going to keep it. So from that perspective, you could say, well, Microsoft has said they're going to keep Bethesda autonomous as a publisher, semi-autonomous as a publisher. So maybe if Bethesda wants to still put Fallout 5 or Elder Scrolls 6 or Starfield on PS5, maybe they still can. But I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a tricky one.
It is a tough one, and I don't know where it'll go.
They might not have decided it.
It's totally just a... I'm sure they don't. And like, when I look to the future, it's just imagining a world where Fallout 5 isn't on PlayStation. I don't know.
Really,
like, it's
that
one
strange?
Thing.
I mean, no, but like, it's one, Oblivion and Morrowind were like Xbox 360, like, exclusives or timed exclusives. Like,
this is in the last generation. Not in that world anymore, though. Like,
that's true.
And while it's true of a lot of Sony exclusives, like, those are, you know, like, Uncharted is just like that's always been on PlayStation. It just feels crazy.
It might
be that just that's the new world. Like, we're in a world that isn't like the world you just mentioned, where, you know, Oblivion came out on 360. We're in a different one. It could be we will be in a different one yet again. It's just that's wild. That'll be wild if that's the case.
Yeah, although it's a good, like, how much does it actually hurt Sony? Like, Elder Scrolls 6 is going to sell 20 million copies, right? But Sony is still going to be raking in money with like people buying all of their games for $70. So the new Uncharted, the next Uncharted, the next Last of Us, the next God of War, like all the shit that they have in their stable, plus all the other third-party stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the premise on the console war, which is that all three of these people, Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, are all fighting different wars. Like they all have different objectives. So it's not zero sum with any of them.
Yeah,
and they can all win.
I don't know if Sony's tactic is actually going to work, but I've said it before. I really feel like Microsoft's makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And this is just another piece in that puzzle where I'm like, great, you aren't focusing on hardware anymore. You don't have to worry about hardware shortages as much. You can just really pummel that Game Pass thing home. It just seems like it's going to come in handy for them. Whereas Sony, I'm like, yeah, I guess you're counting on the people who can afford $70 games and exclusives and like a really specific hardcore gamer niche that is, at least in my eyes, slowly fading away and becoming more of a world where people subscribe to a lot of services and they play some games.
It's funny you say that because I felt like I had the opposite perspective. Like anecdotally, just hearing from people who are like looking to pre-order PS5s who would have never pre-ordered last generation.
Well,
and it feels like...
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the PS5 is the one that you need the hardware. But Xbox is the one where you need Game Pass.
Yeah, but I'm saying that niche of hardcore gamers, I think, has actually gotten way bigger. Like, I don't think it's a niche. And I think that my theory that I've been kind of ruminating on for a while is that the gaming audience, and especially the gaming audience for hardcore games, quote unquote, let's just say that.
Which is fake, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And just for lack of a better word, really. People who aren't just playing games on their phone, which there's nothing wrong with, but like people who are actually into console games.
You know, weirdos.
Yeah. Weirdos like us. I think that audience has expanded exponentially since the last generation. I think games have like gotten bigger than they ever have before because of things like Fortnite and just explosions of like cultural phenomenons. And I think that like phenomena. I think for that reason, I think both of these consoles are just going to sell gangbusters. And I think that,
but like with different overlapping circles in the Venn diagram.
Yeah, it's very possible. Right. I think the PS5 will probably outsell the Xbox overall long term because of the exclusive question and because people who play on PC have no reason to get an Xbox as opposed to PlayStation.
Yeah, and they're doing a hardware model where the hardware really matters, whereas Xbox and Microsoft just isn't doing
Xbox
that, and they're going to make a bunch of money. We won't even know how much money because it's not like they're going to tell us, but
they're going to make a bunch of money. Both of these companies are making like hand over fist money because of the stores. I was right the first time.
I think hand over fist is correct. I'm trying to figure it out because if your hand goes over your fist, that's what the expression is, but why?
Right.
Anyways, who cares? Let's keep talking about video games. I guess so.
Because both of them get a 30% cut out of every digital game sold in their stores, and they're both selling digital consoles. So like anytime anyone buys anything, they're just like getting free money. So they'll both be fine. But I really think, this generation is going to be even bigger than the last one was. And the last one was pretty big. And I just... especially in the pandemic where everybody's jumping into games having never played games before, like they're all bored looking for things to do, that's going to continue through next year. Like we're going to see record sales numbers. I think I'm pretty bullish on the video game industry overall.
I think you're right about that.
Yep.
So yeah, all that to say, I also am scared of our future where Microsoft and Disney own everything.
But if
Microsoft wants to spend a couple of billion on this podcast, just hit us up. You can reach us at tripleclick@maximumfun.org.
Jason is interested in talking to you. We really are not. Yeah, Kirk and I
really
are
really looking to sell out.
No, I'm just kidding. Microsoft, we will respond with just a gif of a middle finger no matter how much you offer. We are punk rock. We are not selling out to the man. We are listener supported.
Heck yeah, we are.
Heck yeah.
Feel free to play this clip in like 5 years when we sell out.
Yeah, that's true. We just owned our future selves.
Well, if Lindsey Graham can say that, and then
that's true,
get away.
No
with
longer
it
matters
on,
what you say.
Nothing matters. Nothing
that's
matters.
That's true.
All right, why don't we take a break? And then we will get into one more thing.
Hey, you like movies? What about coming up with movie ideas over the course of an hour? Because that's what we do every week on Story Break, a writer's room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to come up with a pitch for a movie or TV show based off of totally zany prompts.
Like that time we reimagined Star Wars based on our phone's autocomplete.
Luke Skywalker is a family man and it's Star Wars, but it's a good idea.
Okay, how about that time we broke the story of a bunch of Disney Channel original movies based solely on the title and the poster?
Okay, Sarah Hyland is a 50-foot woman. Let's just go with it, guys.
Or the time we finally cracked the Adobe Photoshop feature film.
Stamp tool is your Woody, and then the autofill is the new Buzz Lightyear.
Join us as we have a good time imagining all the movies Hollywood is too cowardly to make. Story Break comes out every Thursday on Maximum Fun. I don't know why I'm using this voice now.
Have a lot of problems.
How do you juggle your holds at the library?
Well, how do you decide what to read next?
What do you do when you find out an author you love is a huge trash baby?
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
And we're the hosts of Reading Glasses.
We're here to solve all your reader problems and along the way, help you figure out
your reader wheelhouse,
which are the things that will absolutely make you pick up a book. Our listener favorites tend to be magic and a woman on a journey.
And also birds for some reason.
Your reader doghouse.
Yeah, that's the things that'll make you avoid a book.
Ugh, love triangles stress me out so much. Reading Glasses.
Every Thursday on MaximumFun.org.
And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, it is time once again for one more thing.
Sure is.
I'm going to go first this week because I know that at least Kirk and I are champing at the bit to talk about this one. My one more thing is Hades, game that came to Switch last week and also came out of early access. So it's like an official 1.0 release. I have been holding off on this game for a Switch release since we first found out about it. And people have been raving about this game for a long time. And I jumped in. Have played it constantly over the weekend, understand exactly why people have been raving about it so much. This game is fantastic. So a little bit of context, this is the newest game from Supergiant, who are this like all-star studio that has released four games, and all four of them are bangers. They're responsible for Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre, three excellent games. Although I never really got into Transistor, but regardless, three critically
acclaimed
games.
Transistor is an excellent game.
You know, I should give it another chance
on
Switch.
It's really great. It's awesome.
I think I'd love it. But Hades, I like better than all of them so far. And I really like Bastion and Pyre. Hades is a game, you play as the son of Hades trying to escape the underworld. It is a roguelike, so every time you go into the underworld, it's different. It's like procedurally generated world, so it's different levels. At each level, you get to kind of pick like which reward you're going to get next, and that is where the strategy comes into play, because you can build out your character based on the rewards you're getting. So like at the end of each level, you see two orbs or three orbs, and you can pick which one you want. Do I want to go and get a key that'll help me unlock my abilities later, or do I want to go get some coins that'll help me now? And a lot of the strategy is thinking like long-term rewards and stuff that carries on with your character over time, and versus short-term rewards and stuff that carries on with your character just for this run that you're doing. There's something really appealing about it. Not just like everything about it is great. The atmosphere is great. The way it feels to play is great. The actions, the weapons are great. There's like a wide variety of weapons and they all feel different and awesome. The writing and dialogue is like top notch. The voice acting, the music, everything about this is
the art,
just perfect.
Did you talk about
the art,
that yet?
The art is amazing.
Great looking game.
The level of horniness is through the roof.
yeah, you may have noticed people all over social media talking about their Hades crushes.
There's
a lot of people you can crush on in the game.
I saw a fantastic gif of a woman streamer playing it, and she's just playing, and then she gets to like the character, the Ares character, and she just goes like, oh, and like she has this face of pure delight and horniness. It's hilarious. So anyway, so the thing that I was going to say, the thing that I think is really appealing to people and to me in particular about it, is that it never feels like your run through the game is a waste. Like you never feel like you're wasting time. Usually a roguelike accomplishes that, because usually the definition of a roguelike is that essentially you lose everything, and it's like you have to keep trying and trying and trying. You lose everything when you die in a run, and they call it run because that's the new tries, right? So usually in a roguelike, the sense of accomplishment is that you have kind of honed your skills and you're going to be better at it the next time. But in this, the game is so good at giving you those long-term rewards and like unlocking new things and giving you new dialogue every time you finish a run and get back to like the main chamber of where Hades is, and like all the other NPCs are who can talk to you. It's just excellent at making you want to keep playing and playing. You never feel like you're wasting your time, and that to me is what makes it such a great game. One of my favorites of the year so far, in a year that has been otherwise kind of mediocre for me. I love it to death. Kirk, I know you're also playing it, so I want to hear your kind of overall thoughts as well.
Yeah, this game rips. It's super, super good. I played a little bit of Hades in early access when it kind of first came out, and was like, oh, this is good, and then didn't really get super into it, partly because it was in early access and I think I was playing other things. This is out now. It's out on Switch, which is what I've been playing it on, and it's really great on Switch, just because, you know, performance isn't quite as smooth as on PC, but it's just playing it as on a handheld. And they're going to add cross save at some point in the future, which is also really cool because I do have this game on PC. So playing it like, you know, on a PC with like total smoothness would be pretty cool too.
Although it's pretty smooth on Switch, worth saying.
No, there are noticeable frame rate dips anytime the screen gets busy. Oh yeah, heck yeah. It dips way below 60. Like whenever there's a bunch of stuff happening. But it doesn't really detract. Like I don't mind, but playing it on PC, it's like noticeably smoother. Might be your mileage may vary kind of thing. So Supergiant Games to me is just this, man, there are just so few studios like this. They're very small and they're so singular because each role in the studio feels so distinct. I know, so Gen Z is the art lead at Supergiant. She's responsible for how all these games look. And these games have looked like $1 billion from the very beginning. Like Bastion looks amazing. And they all have her style. Like they all look similar. The characters are gorgeous and like, yeah, like horny, but in this really cool way. Like every character just like looks fascinating and the art on all of them is so cool. The environment art is like incredible. All the environments are so intricate and like colorful and just beautiful. So it's amazing looking. It's amazing sounding. Darren Korb, the composer of this game, rules. And like he's ruled from the beginning. I mean, that was like what made Bastion great. But also, the voice cast is great, and Logan Cunningham, who is this voice actor who's been working with them from the beginning, is great. Though I didn't know this until yesterday. Do you know who plays Zagreus, the main character? It's freaking Darren Korb.
I found that out today, yeah.
The audio director, yeah.
So that blows me away, because he's great. He's like really good. He also plays Skelly, the training skeleton. He plays two characters in it. So that guy is like a triple threat. But the music kills in this game. And like a big part of it for me, I totally agree that when I'm playing, like the fact that you're always getting the like purple goo that you use to level yourself up long term and the keys to get you new weapons, and like there's always a feeling that you're sort of making your way through it. There's two other things. That one is that I just like love playing it, and every new encounter is like a treat just because it's so well designed. And Transistor in particular, I think, is like an incredibly well designed game, and you can just tell they've been playing with a lot of these design ideas for so long. And actually, Hades is their safest game, I would say. Like, from a design standpoint, it's the safest. Like, every other game was weird in some way. Like, Transistor is like a kind of a more tactical game in some ways. There's like a grid that you're moving along. It's not as much of a just straight up Diablo feeling game the way that Hades is. And Pyre is like really experimental to the point where I think a lot of people kind of bounced off that game.
Weirdo sports game.
Yeah, it's like a basketball RPG. So those are like, but there are still these mechanical ideas they play with, like Transistor. You'll really like that game, Jason. There's all this stuff with like your build in that game where if you take damage, your weapons get damage too, so you have to like switch your loadout in the middle of a fight and get by without that move that you were surviving on the whole time, and you realize how well balanced the combat system is, which is also true in Hades, where like whatever weapon you're using, whatever you're fighting, it's going to be like a like total knockdown drag out fight that's going to be really exciting every time. So it's so well designed, and there's so much writing. Like, it's nuts how much writing there is in this game, and that's Greg Cassavin, the lead writer and the writer of all these games. I can't believe how much writing there is. Every time you go back to Hades, there's new dialogue. Every time you go somewhere new, there's something new. Even encounters like the boss fight against the Fury, Meg, like it starts changing eventually, and like things just keep changing. And there's this feeling of like no run is the same in this game, not just because it's procedurally generated, but because they've written a jillion lines of dialogue and they have a whole story that unfolds that's built around the idea of a repeating dungeon where you're always getting new dialogue. I think I've never heard a line of dialogue repeat, and I've probably played like 12 hours of the game or something. Like, it's totally nuts. So yeah, it's an amazing game. I'm like over the moon about it. I can't wait to play it more.
And we haven't even gotten into the tactics part of it, which is that like you can really like min-max the character builds.
Oh, there's so much strategy, yeah.
So every time you play through the game, every time you do a run, you'll meet the various gods of Olympus, like Ares and Zeus and Poseidon and so on and so on, and they'll all give you different powers based on who you find when, and a lot of people you can like max out your builds based on selecting a certain weapon which pairs well with like this particular boon that you get from the god, and you get to choose between a bunch of boons, and it's just very like cerebral, and but not too cerebral. It's just got that perfect balance of everything.
I like that there's an element of randomness there, even though you can get the trinkets from them, that then if you equip them, your next boon will be from that god, which like Athena has like really good defensive boons. So I've been using her because I'm like, you know, it's good. If you're kind of starting out, it's useful, really her deflection skill. So like you can kind of be like, all right, I'm going to like nudge the like RNG generator this way, you know, or the RNG this way. But you're not able to like build a very specific build. You kind of don't know what you're going to get. Or Chaos is a great example where like Chaos shows up and there are really weird, you know, buffs that you get that also come with debuffs and they don't happen all the time. So there's so much, you can't just plan everything out. So you have to be kind of loose. And they've always done a good job of that. That's why I think Transistor is such a well-designed game, because you have to stay flexible in that game. And I really like when games creatively push you outside of just like, okay, yes, you can just like use that one attack on that one weapon over and over again on most enemies. This game is very good at pushing you outside of that, which I think is really cool.
Yes, yes, yes. Everybody go play Hades.
It's so good. Man, it's so good.
Maddie, what's your one more thing?
Okay. So I watched the second season of Pen 15. You guys remember, we talked about this first season of this show a while back.
Oh, yes, and I watched the first season and loved it.
It rules. The second season also rules, but I just want to recommend to the listener what this show even is.
Yes.
So it's two adult women comedians who are playing themselves in middle school, and all of the other actors on the show are played by middle school aged kids, except they have to act like these two adult women are also middle school aged. But I mean, that's a hilarious enough premise on its own. But I feel like what really makes this show work so well for me is that it's very rare for me to see a show that's about women that engages in like gross out humor and embarrassing stuff that happens to teenage girls. I feel like that's just a topic that hasn't really been touched that much in media, because usually it's men who are making media and they don't really know how to write those experiences. But this show is based on actual real life experiences of these women, and it's so like, it's amazing. Watching season two, my girlfriend and I were just screaming at the television and how embarrassing 90% of it is, because it's unbearable to watch, but it's also the greatest. And the show is almost surreal in its humor. Like sometimes just weird shit is unfolding and you're like, I don't even know what I'm looking at, but it's amazing. And I hope people will check it out, because I'm really glad it exists.
Where can people watch it?
It's on Hulu.
I loved season one of this show. And
so weird. So
yeah,
good.
It's funny because this show, I would have said this show is one of the first to really mine. I mean, it is one of the first, but I would have said it's the first to really mine middle school as a specific era of hell that we all lived through. But actually, Big Mouth is another show that is very similar in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not, it does handle like girls and boys and like both of the things that they go through.
They have a similar energy.
Very similar energy, actually. Like there are even some, I remember there's like a subplot in season one that kind of matches up, but they're still very different because of the whole adult framing, which sort of neutralizes some. It like both enhances the energy of the show, but also neutralizes other aspects of it, and makes everything a little weird. So the horrible, awkward situations feel a little more bearable in some ways, because it's adults who are suffering.
That's the cartoon aspect of Big Mouth, does.
Right?
It's true. Like, yeah, very similar. Yes, yes. The heightened aspect.
Like if you were watching actual little kids do the stuff in Big Mouth, that would not be pleasant.
No, yeah. Well, that's true.
There's just something about watching adults be as embarrassing and strange as middle schoolers are, especially if you're like, well, this is clearly based on something that really happened, and it's like a unique sensation to watch that. And I think everyone should at least watch the pilot for the show. It's so weird and good.
It's great.
Kirk, what's your one more thing?
My one more thing is a little 2007 video game that you both might have heard of called Super Mario Galaxy.
Cool.
That I have been playing for the first time over the past few days.
That's a cool game.
Yeah, it is. Holy shit. It's amazing. I knew it was good, but I don't think I knew how wild it is. I'm like through the first galaxy. I'm up to the next one, but it's already clear. This game, the developers of this game also worked on 3D World, 3D Land, and Odyssey. So these are kind of the modern stewards of 3D Mario. And I remember playing 3D Land on the 3DS and not having played Galaxy and thinking, and having people be like, oh, this is going to be amazing because these people are amazing. And then that game is amazing. And it's the same feeling that Galaxy has, that Odyssey has, and that 3D World, I didn't love that one as much, has of like constant new ideas.
You might like it more when it's not on the Wii U, because the Wii U is I think when it comes to Switch, it'll be given another shot.
Yeah. That seems likely. It's not a bad game. I just like, it didn't, whatever, I didn't play a lot of it. But so the sense of like new ideas always coming at you is like really amazing in all of those games, where you're just like, holy shit, like how have I been playing this for this long? And there's still like every level is something new. But Galaxy's fundamental idea, the way of that it uses 3D space, the way that you're like walking around these little planets, that it uses gravity as a mechanic, like there, it's just totally mind blowing. Like I'm like having vertigo half the time I'm playing this game, because the first time that you realize playing this, even having played all those other games, and I loved Odyssey, it was a great game, but when you walk up to the edge of a world in this game and you walk over it and the gravity holds you down and the camera flips over the side of the planet, there's nothing else like that. Like, I've never seen something like that in a Mario game. And it blew my mind, like, the first time I did it. I guess I've seen people play this game, but it's just different when you're playing it yourself. And you realize, holy shit, this whole game's going to be like this. And now I'm doing the thing where you're, like, bouncing from those gravity stars, and, like, you flip from one planet down to another planet that's right near it, and your gravity, like, you switch to a different gravity center. And it's just... Yep, that's how the game works, and now you're walking around on this one, and it's so, it manages to be intuitive despite introducing these totally nuts ideas that I still don't really see in very many games. So it's really amazing. I mean, it's just an amazing game. I played a little bit with Emily also in like co-op mode.
That was what I was going to ask you, because I remember liking the co-op mode in that
co-op
game.
Co-op mode is fun.
It's really good. I like it better than co-op in Odyssey, because she can really just sort of chill, and the game has got so much going on that like if it were more involved and we really needed to work together, it would be too much. But with her just like shooting stuff and, you know, grabbing stars, then we're both just kind of marveling at whatever bananas thing is happening on screen at any given moment. It's so cool. Mm-hmm.
It's such a trippy game. When it came out in 2007, I think it was 2007. Yeah, it was 2007. I was in college. This game happens to be extremely good paired with weed and
I can imagine.
in college if you happen to imbibe a little bit and enjoy this game.
Of course.
Just throwing that out there.
I can totally imagine. That lets me segue into another thing I was gonna say, which is that aesthetically, I think this game is on a different aesthetic level for me than any Mario game I've played. Like, I don't love the Mario aesthetic in general. Like, it's not a game I think of for its aesthetics. It's pleasing, but it basically, everyone just looks like a like inflatable balloon kind of, and everything is really colorful, but just sort of like clown town. This game is really beautiful at times.
Wait until you get the clown galaxy.
there's these pastel storyboards, the way they tell the story, and the music is just out of sight. I mean, Mario has always had great music, but this music is just amazing. And it's going for this whole like kind of...
It's really the orchestration, the way that it feels like there's an orchestra like scoring your movements. It's really
cool. And the melodies, they're using a lot of like Lydian and a lot of these sounds that are just like really bright and sort of, it sounds like a 90s cartoon a little bit, like the sort of like explorer cartoon where you're in outer space and you're going to a new adventure. It's so adventurous. It's so friggin' good.
Something worth noting, by the way, about the aesthetics is that they are so much better now, because now this game is in HD. And when it came out in 2007, we did have HD games. Like 2006 was when the 360 and PS3 were like starting to release HD level games. And having this Wii game come out that was like 480, like, didn't look great on like your big screen TVs at the time. And so now you can really appreciate it a lot more now that it's in high definition.
It does look nice, though. I think it's really, I mean, the music and the art direction and the art direction would work at any resolution. Like, it's just, it's so amazing looking. I mean, when you launch off of one planet in a galaxy and just go flying in like a spiral around to another one. Oh, last thought is that it's really made me realize how many games draw from this, like playing Gravity Ghost, that really cool game. Like that game is totally like using the gravity mechanic. And then playing Outer Wilds, a game that I dearly love,
yeah.
before playing Galaxy, it's like watching Stranger Things before watching E.T. Like you're like, oh, well, these are both good. And I liked watching both of them. But now I see like they got a lot of ideas from, you know, from the one thing. So anyways, it's a wonderful game. I love it. I'm going to play the hell out of it. Like I adore playing it. It's so good.
Oh man, I'm so excited because there's so much stuff coming that will like.
I know. I know because every freaking level rules. Is like some amazing new thing. So I think that I'm sure that continues to the end.
Well, yeah, and some of the galaxies are just like giant puzzles or like bonus mini games and stuff like that. And then it's really unfortunate that Mario Galaxy 2 isn't on there because that game like really takes everything.
Yeah, I'll find a way to play it
and like really takes it to the next level. Yeah, it's incredible.
But I'm happy with Galaxy 1 for now. It's great, and I'm very excited.
Okay, cool. So on that note, that is it for this week's episode. So it is time to say goodbye. Kirk.
It is.
Maddie, we will see you next week.
Yep, see you both next week.
Bye.
Triple Click is produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edited and mixed the show and also wrote our theme music. Our show art is by Tom DJ. Triple Click is a proud member of the Maximum Fun Podcast Network, and if you like our show, we hope you'll head over to MaximumFun.org/join and consider becoming a member. Doing so helps support us and gets you access to an exclusive Triple Click episode each month. Find us online at TripleClickPodcast.com, on Twitter at TripleClickPod, and send email to TripleClick@MaximumFun.org. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.